Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is the alien spirit whose name we do not know, but who is inhabiting the body of Pete. Hello, the alien inhabiting Pete.
Last person to talk to me like that worked in a Malaysian toy factory for 15 cents an hour. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 213, the season ending Split Up, is brought to you by Donuts and Ketchup. How many kingdoms, how many lives were given in pursuit of this treasure?
Yum, Pete. Here we are at the end of the season. Reminder, there's still one Runaways podcast to come as we wrap up season two. Next week, let's give ourselves a little time, Pete. That's because between when people are listening to this and when we're going to do the season two finale, we're going to be talking Punisher, episode 201, Star Trek Discovery, episode 201, that over on the Pop Culture Podcast feed and the separate feeds for those two properties. So give it a little time to breathe, but we'll be talking season two as a whole in the future soon.
Yeah, could possibly be some surprises in that wrap-up podcast, so you'll just have to check in and see.
Time will tell, Pete, but for now, will you take us into the recap?
Over stylistic animation of Zavin voices that no one knows the origin of the story which passed down through the generations until it was known, a truth, a prophecy. And at some point, it is heard by someone who comes to believe it is about them. And it's a love story that unites two worlds and brings peace to the universe. A believer stowed away on a ship that carried a family of exiled royal magistrates at the center of the prophecy. The stowaway did not remain secret for long, however, and became a help to them. And soon they mastered every skill necessary to run the ship. Peace was not to last, and the ship crashed. Perhaps the stowaway was not the one in the prophecy. Maybe it wasn't even true. We see the stowaway plummet to the bottom of the hole, where death would have been a relief from the uncertainty, until there was a light from above in Carolina. And it occurred to the stowaway that this has always been part of the prophecy, that they'd crashed in just the right place because the light was their beloved, Zavin's intended. Zavin removes her hands from Carolina's head. She had never done that before to anyone like her. Little invasive, but beautiful. She used familiar concepts to help her understand and bond, but she senses Carolina's hesitation. Zavin then gets down on one knee to her savior and soulmate to propose when Nico comes in and wants to know who she is. Chase tells Pride the other kids aren't coming back without a fight, but they want Chase to convince them. He points out they're still murderers. Victor tells him he has to give it his best shot, or Pride will go to war. As she dunks a donut in ketchup, Zavin learns how many kingdoms and lives were lost to high fructose corn syrup. But Leslie tells the shapeshifter, who's still getting used to having a mouth, not to talk with it open. The remaining runaways debate keeping Leslie and Zavin in the hostel. Carolina says they have a responsibility with Zavin. She's not sure about her mom. No more roommates who aren't 100% in. Alex's phone starts to make a really annoying sound, and it's Chase. He answers, and Gert makes that face. He wants to meet and prevent something bad from happening, but needs to relay it in person. Let's just say the girls do not think this plan is number one. Chase tells them about the customized weapons. Victor comes in after the call and notices the weapon specs are up and adjusted. He doesn't know who made the changes, which have made them considerably more dangerous. Chase thinks the illness is progressing as Victor describes the feeling of drowning. And the worst part, the weapons have already been produced. Carolina shares a moment with her mother. It's too late for them. After what happened at the crater, Leslie is certain Carolina will now be worshipped as the head of the Church of Gaborim. Her actions confirmed everything in the Book of Gaborim, and the followers will be desperate to seek her out for another encounter as a messianic figure. Nico tells Zavin she can't come on the mission, and Zavin shapeshifts into an exact duplicate of Nico. But Carolina's no one's betrothed or messiah. Today she's sticking with her old friends. Zavin will undertake the noble endeavor of protecting the Holy Mother and the Haven. Chase arrives at the meeting where Alex is packing a fistagon. Gert wants it noted she's there under duress, and everyone's upset at Chase. He has an offer from their parents. He tells them they can't win and they'll hurt them if they have to. But if they come home, pride is theirs to do all the things they've ever talked about. But it's a last chance. Chase tells them they're going to use the mind wipe drug, and Gert considers that a good thing. Chase leaves. Tina calls him as he gets to his car and informs him they're moving on. Everybody's ready to roll out, except a hyperventilating Dale. Victor advises Tina to make every shot count since she can't reload. Five drones converge on the runaways and begin firing. Nico's having tomatoes, trouble. She can't fry a bubble. Carolina's power is similarly mitigated, and Alex's attempt to use the fistagon is jammed. They decide to split up. Nico and Carolina get to a gated tunnel, which the drone crashes into and goes offline. Another one corners them, but is out of darts. Nico doesn't want to leave Carolina, but she tells her she will always come back to her. Nico tries to tell Carolina she loves her. Tina uses closed-circuit TV feeds to tell the Yorkses where Molly and Gert are. Molly hammer throws a scooter owned by Gert's friend Earl from the Wizard Gala into one drone, which takes out the second. Tina gives Alex location to the Wilders, who are hot on his trail after he boosts Litcoin 2 from a car wash. Nice throwback to the beginning of the season with Litcoin 1. Jeffrey should have never let him play Grand Theft Auto. With the chase escalating, the Wilders insist Tina back off with the drone. At the hostel, Zavin impersonates Carolina in an attempt to make a mop-carrying Leslie feel more comfortable. Leslie explains the complexities of human attraction, but Zavin is convinced it is her destiny to be with Carolina. She also tells Leslie they're going to want her help when they come for the baby. Zavin read Leslie's biomarkers immediately and knows the baby is of royal lineage. She tells her the magistrate and his family will not allow her to possess one of their own. Leslie figures out Jonah is the magistrate, and Zavin explains the other aliens escaped when the ship exploded. They are Gaborim, unlike her as a Zartan. In their light form, Zavin believes the aliens took new hosts, so they're still out there and gathering their family. Tina tracks Carolina to a Frogtown warehouse before losing her, but Victor gets out of his car right in front of a tent with a bicycle. Chase sits by the pool in his parents' spacious backyard, sketching plans for something called a leapfrog, and ponders whether he's made the right choice, which his mother affirms. But Chase chides the secret keeping that got them into this mess in the first place. He also shares his concern about his father and his flaking skin. What if the healing algorithm and Jonah's DNA are transforming him into an alien? Victor calls Carolina sweetheart before she blasts him. But wait, it's Mike on a bike. Whoa. Victor uses simple inhibitor toys on Carolina, but Mike foils that before Zavin reveals herself to her betrothed. Victor knows Zavin and thought she died in the explosion, but she calls him magistrate and annoys him with more talk of destiny. But since there's no longer a ship, there's no more need for Zavin, who has a habit of inserting herself where she's not welcome. Victor blasts the talkative Zavin, revealing himself as Magistrate Jonah. But taking it all includes Carolina. A missing Zavin is going to be a problem, though. Gert and Molly hide out in a market, but the Yorkses find them. They split up, and Stacy takes Gert, who eludes her, and brings out not Stacy. Molly runs from Dale, who she convinces several Spanish-speaking bystanders is a pedophilio. Cornered, Gert confronts not Stacy about her lack of glasses before getting knocked out. Stacy wants a shocked Dale to help her extract the youngling. Alex exits the car and eludes his parents on foot, taking aim at them with his gun. Nico brings her staff to Pride HQ, and her mother zaps her with the subsonic wave generator. Flip you, Mom. Good thing they sent the employees home early. They fight, and Robert joins in, refusing to watch this time. In a stylized slow-mo throwdown, Nico smashes the wave scrambler, but of course there's another. The Minorus both backhand their daughter, and Tina knocks her down before Nico's eyes get that strange purple look again. Tina tells Robert that's not her doing, but she's seen it before. Then Nico smash. After she leaves, Tina discovers Robert was slashed by the flying glass. The Wilders hear a gunshot and find Alex. He says LAPD's on the way and they should drop the guns because the LAPD has a thing about black folks brandishing guns. A little help from Tamar and a note to a cold case detective. It's Domino's, Mom. Alex flees and the cops find the warm gun in the Wilders' car. If the bullets match, somebody's getting a promotion. Jeffrey admits the vehicle is his and they are arrested. Not Victor arrives at the Steins' house with Carolina, where Chase thinks he killed her. But Jonah would never kill his daughter. Chase throws a prototype inhibitor and it doesn't work because his suit is lined. Jonah blasts Chase and Janet. Gert comes to in the back of an SUV attached to a trailer containing old lace. Dale tells her they're fleeing the situation and Stacy. Jonah receives not Stacy at the Stein house, wondering what took her so long. She had to transfer Gert to Dale. Not Tina had a medical emergency with Robert. Unfortunately, they're missing a fourth member no one's heard from, Jonah and not Stacy's unpredictable son. Not Tina is apparently their child, but the host of the other doesn't seem to be one of the parents, or they'd know by now. They float the possibility it's one of the kids. Molly, Nico, and Alex rendezvous back at the hostel. Zavin and Leslie come in, and Zavin explains where Carolina is because she failed. The magistrate will be difficult to destroy, but not impossible. They'll need to kill his family as well. Alex believes they'll figure it out because they have each other. The magistrate explains to his mate, building a new ship will be complicated and could take a generation or two. Humans are so fragile. But thanks to his energy conversion device, they will take their life force and fuel their own. So, which one looks the tastiest?
Pete, this was an episode that featured a bunch of far-out villains. Let's start with Magistrate.
Let's start with Magistrate indeed, Matt. The reveal was not exactly a super surprise. I think the reveal more so of his role of the royalty now, which makes Carolina a princess, right?
Star princess.
Half
trying to escape her evil father.
Right? Like, who is Darth Vader? I getcha. It's an interesting wrinkle to throw us, in particular when this was done in such a unusual sequence. I mean, we're 304 episodes of Marvel Cinematic TV in now, Matt, and I can't recall as visually unusual a sequence as this, apart from maybe the Daredevil episode that much of it occurred in black and white.
Shades of the, was it Fargo season 3 that had the saddest little robot?
Yes, one of my favorite ones. Yes, yes.
I do wonder if it was like, and I'm not trying to suggest that this is a ripoff in any way, but I wonder if it was as close as, hey, we saw Fargo do this thing, which was a way to tell a story that was out of time and space relative to the main narrative.
I can help.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do we
about
do that
an alien?
Yes.
Who can help?
See, it's all connected, and I think it's a great use. And I'd rather, I mean, look, what's the alternative? To have Zavin give a monologue for 90 seconds while we all go, okay, this nice actress is giving a talk. It was a way to really offset things. I think the fact that also that it was animated, it was an opportunity for it to feel maybe not 100% real. Like, is she giving some these and thous and some flourish to her story that might not be 100% true? You know, maybe. Like, I don't think that's going to be a major area of story exploration, but I think it's a way to kind of de-authenticize what she's saying just enough to kind of, if nothing else, to kind of be like, hey, this isn't like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy over there. Yeah, it's all the same galaxy, but we're in Los Angeles. We're in this kind of relatable situation. So this very extraordinary portion of storytelling is going to be shown in an extraordinary way.
Could not agree more. When we flip that to Victor and really the question of who is whom when, you know, he doesn't have memory of tuning the weapons to the most dangerous settings. Obviously, that was Jonah or Magistrate, as I guess we're going to know him now. Like, I think we need a little bit more as far as being able to identify the characters. But not everybody has the problem of needing to do that for their podcast.
I agree with what you said earlier, that, like, it hasn't been this big mystery that, like, and there are multiple spirits in there. It's been interestingly laid out since the Jonah becomes inhabited, like, you know, OG Jonah becomes inhabited by this alien spirit. Since that episode, we've kind of been ahead of the story, which is always an interesting place to be. Clearly they intended it, but also kind of was this like, oh man, don't tell me that some of them aren't, you know, some of them have alien light eggs inside them. Oh, I didn't see that coming. But of course we did hear for Victor. I guess I was a bit surprised that it was Jonah in Victor. But I like it, and maybe this is the first time that it's occurred to me that the two actors are kind of vaguely similar, if only because of their boxy haircut, and it kind of, I wonder how much effort went in by James Marsters to affect a Jonah-like persona, if at the very least in this episode, in these scenes of grand reveal.
I had the tiniest difficulty even maybe imagined thinking that I was hearing Jonah's voice or an impersonation of it come out of Victor's mouth.
Pete, that's the magic of acting. Do you think that he's, you know, he Marsters, do you think he slogged in the slings and arrows of Buffy, of Angel, of Smallville in Torchwood so that he could be age 56 and not be able to be two characters at once fighting for the power inside him. I mean, this is why, Pete, he is an actor.
He is of the highest caliber, Matt. But with not Tina here, and again, unsure of when Tina's got the wheel and the alien inside her has the wheel, the whole sequence with the drones, with the itchy trigger finger, and then the physical fight with her daughter takes on a different meaning.
The whole portion of the story here with not Tina, with not Stacy, possibly the not Yorkses. I'm still a bit confused by what these aliens can and can't do, but this notion of, you know, of we've known that definitely Tina and very, very likely Stacy before this episode were also likely inhabited. It does lead to this gray area of who is doing what. And I think we leave this episode on the topic of not Tina. We leave it a bit clearer, knowing that it was the alien force ready to use maximum threat against these kids in order to capture them. But again, kind of where that line is exactly, I think the show is purposefully vague.
Yeah. And I think, too, given the nature of the character before, the controlling nature of Tina, having the alien, though the alien has previously manifested as, you know, being seductive and all about the senses and pleasure and everything like that, it was difficult to tell in this episode when is which. But it would appear now, Matt, that at least with the three of them, with Victor, with Tina, and now with Stacy, they are almost completely consumed. I mean, they can't be wholly consumed because then we'd never get the parents back again.
Yeah, which I think the flavor of the show, at least thus far, is not dramatic reveal that we are going to kill half the parents and one of the teens. Like, I think there's a certain high wire act that the show is pulling off here to kind of, you know, keep things intact. I think Schwartz and Savage don't want to kill off any of these people just to say, hey, we killed somebody off. We did a Whedon. So I think there's this route to come back and reset, maybe not wholly, but to reset and to keep everybody around for next season? Sure. However, Pete, Robert's wound definitely looked like it was pretty serious. Great kind of camera reveal here. Is he paying the price as a villain that he may be on his way out?
Well, I mean, to jump into the fight, to say that, you know, he made a mistake previously by not involving himself when Tina fought Nico, what was that, like episode 2 or 3 was that fight? And to jump in here to hit his daughter as savagely as he does, he pretty nice block on the staff at one point. But yeah, like if they're going to go that route and in a not yet renewed for season 3, they decide, well, you know what? There needs to be a cost. It's the sacrifice that the island demands. Then, you know, maybe it's Robert. I get the impression, given that not Tina has gone over to the Steins, that Tina got him to the hospital just in time.
By the way, kudos to episode director Jeffrey Webb, particularly for that fight scene. I think... Great scene. If you want to be critical, you can go back and rewatch that fight scene and say, hey, here's a punch that if I watch carefully or if I slow it down, Robert is punching at his daughter and he's, you know, 8 to 10 inches away from her face, but because the camera's from behind, it looks like she's hit, blah, blah, blah. Or I think there's occasionally some, you know, some punches thrown that look a little laborious, but they used those three actors for a lot of it. Yeah. And that's the really impressive thing. You want to hide it. You know, like, I don't expect full, you know, karate action out of these three actors. They're not, you know, full-time stunt people. You want to hide it a little bit with shaky cam or with, all right, we're going to zoom in as he punches. So the actual punch on the face is out of the camera frame because it's all so wild and energetic. And also we've given him very clear stunt directions to not hit her in the moneymaker. And, you know, we're going to shake the camera a lot. It was a really neat way to get those three faces, to get those three actors in the vast majority of that fight scene.
It completely worked. The stakes were there and you absolutely bought it. And yeah, okay. So there's a little bit of slow-mo and Nico is fighting in combat boots and, you know, the whole thing, but it really worked and we root for her there and that, you know, she's taken over and Tina has seen whatever's gone on here only adds one to her potential villainy and two, Matt, now that she's taken over by an alien, her daughter will continue with this and not have her mother potentially to stop it.
I mean, pathos there. We also have the Wilders arrested by the LAPD. Now, do I think that that's it, Pete? It's curtains for them. You know, no, she's a lawyer. There's some connection to the gun in them, but I don't think this is anything that can't get you out on bail or that sort of thing for season three. But more importantly, Alex has been asked by the story, I guess, or Alex has paid this familial pound of flesh to get his parents kind of out of the periphery and onto the scope of law enforcement.
He's been bent on it all season long. And I guess one of his storylines going forward is going to be the old Willy Wonka. You know, now that you got everything you wished for, now what? He's gotten them put away. Question, Matt, if you are taken into custody with your lawyer, can your lawyer represent you?
Well, one can represent oneself in court, right?
Right.
So, while I think that's while probably self-representation is probably not a recommended tact by lawyers in general, particularly lawyers who want to get paid, if you can self-represent, then I don't see why a spouse couldn't represent. Again, it's probably not like what it's probably not the best course, but it's probably legit.
I will take your legal advice over that of many a counselor, Matt,
including Mrs. Wilder,
especially Mrs. Wilder. That lady, I would not put her on retainer. Finally, Matt, not Stacy, who I think it's pretty interesting, is cast as Jonah's mate.
Well, I think it's pretty interesting that though the bodies that these aliens inhabit can crumble and flake and whatnot, apparently they also can fix, you know, like poor vision and all that that represents. Yes. It's just, I mean, look, I get that there's a certain comic convention there. I mean, my goodness, Pete, a comic character who's different when he or she wears glasses and not, okay, certainly familiar territory. But to me, it was just maybe a comic trope, a smidge too far. But she is not just physically wily. She is also, you know, she also has smarts. When they're in the market thing and she kind of reads the situation and gets rid of the shopkeeper by go make change with, you know, the chorizo man or whatever. So
he was the incense man. It's Chuck the incense man. Let's say it with the respect it demands.
I do apologize. I'm sure Chuck works very hard on those homemade incenses. Again, it kind of shows some smarts there. I think in a show, Pete, that already has all of these characters, the kids, the parents, etc. Now for what? For three of the adults, they now have other characters in them. Like, you know, kudos at a certain point in the writer's room. You go, all right, how do we keep track of these different aliens? All right, one of the aliens doesn't wear glasses because the mom does. So fair's fair.
Well, time to talk some theories, Matt. What have you got?
Pete, this royal baby that Leslie is carrying, does that confirm that this is, through some fashion or another, the product of Jonah's seed?
It's got to be, right? Like, I mean, we know that the time frame puts them back in sometime in 2017, if not early 2018. And you have to take Zavin at her word that she's able to tell whether the baby is human or not. And it ups the ante. I guess the question after that is, does Jonah, does the rest of the alien family slash crew slash whoever else is there know there's another one on the way?
Well, I certainly hope Jonah does. Otherwise, I don't think he understood a whole variety of things in his time as a human.
Right, but Matt, we've been chided before. What was that? That was Iron Fist, right? We've been chided by a listener. You can't make this up, dear listeners here. We were chided once by a listener.
I don't know that it was a listener. It might have just been somebody. Was it a listener?
It was a listener.
Okay, it was a listener.
A no longer listener.
Right.
Who wrote this really angry letter concerning a storyline in Iron Fist that a woman knows the exact moment she's been impregnated, which I don't think is how it actually works. You do not know the second that, boom, I have reached pregnancy. You take a test, then you know medically you are pregnant. Could there, of course, be indications, you know, things that would happen that would tell a woman she's with child? Of course. But the second the act has been completed and sperm cell has found egg cell and they unite, there's not this signal that is suddenly sent to the brain like the bell going off on your toaster oven.
I think, too, we were also chastised, not just for that lacking the perspective which you've just described. I think there also was, well, Pete, I think there was the notion of us being mere seed shooters, which was a weird conversation to have. I think the point being, Pete, if we
it's
are
not
merely...
the first time I've been objectified, Matthew Lafferty, it won't be the last.
If we are mere lunkheads unaware of that particular topic, then I suppose Jonah could be too, although he did successfully create a baby, co-create. I don't want to take away anything from Leslie, Pete. I want to be clear here. But he successfully fathered a child once already. So again, I am not
without knowledge in this area as the son of an OBGYN for parts of four decades. So this was, believe it or not, talk around the kitchen table. And I know that a signal is not sent to a woman's head the moment that she's having a child. Next theory, Matt.
Pete, the crumbly eyes that we see on Nico, maybe imperfect CGI, I wasn't quite sure. But anyhow, Tina says she's seen it before. Can we take this as a definitive, not quite definitive, implicit Doctor Strange reference?
Oh, it's confirmed. It's absolutely confirmed. And it had long been a thing. There are screen captures of a woman who matches the then Tina Minoru description before Runaways was a series, and they've carried it over here. And I love that they've done that. We, of course, will, I'm sure, learn with a renewal more about it. But yeah, book it. It's confirmed.
Now, I'm really looking forward to our season 2 wrap discussion, where I really want to focus on some of the adaptation process from the graphic novel to the comics. It wasn't formally a graphic novel to the screen here. Side note, some of this Zavin Battle Beyond the Stars type stuff. I literally read about yesterday, then or 2 days ago, then watched the episode yesterday, whatever it was. It was like, from my experience, it literally was read this fresh story, then watch how it's been adapted, you know, 8 years later or whatever it is. One thing though, Pete,
actually, it's 13 at this point.
Wow. Well, I mean, it might have been a slightly later issue when that was first mentioned, but anyhow. One thing that I was sure would never, ever, ever make the adaptation was the Leapfrog, a rather goofy conveyance used in the comics. Here we see Chase sketching it. Pete, well, we get a car of the future that doesn't quite fly, but hops sort of flies. Will we get that in season three?
We got it here, and this allows them to have their cake and eat it too. They could never, ever reference the Leapfrog again, and they've had it on screen. They've done that. Or they could go crazy and find a situation for it or retcon it in such way. I have not arrived to the point in the comics where I have glimpsed the Leapfrog. I knew the moment I saw it, this had to come out of the comics. This had to be a reference of some sort. But yeah, pretty interesting that they chose to put it in, whether or not that's on the writer's room wall for a potential season three or season eight or whatever, remains to be seen.
I will ask one more question, Pete, and I'll save a couple for the season wrap here. Will we see, and I know we've covered this before, but here we are having completed this episode, will we see the potential crossover of Cloak and Dagger somehow help the day, or our Runaways helping the day in a future season of Cloak and Dagger? I'd say probably not Cloak and Dagger season two, but will we see that crossover happen as it did multiple times in the comics?
I mean, they haven't really been quiet about it. I guess I'm just confused given where their story leaves off here. No renewal yet announced, and we know that Cloak and Dagger is filming, if not having wrapped.
I think it has wrapped. I'll have info on that in a moment. I think it did wrap already.
Okay. I think the Runaways might show up there first, but it's going to take some explaining. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but it's going to.
I take back what I said, Pete. Filming for season two began in October, and giving, I don't know, just back of the envelope, probably 5 months to production. The first season took about that long. You know, first season's always a little slower as you figure stuff out, pilot episode, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, they probably are still in the middle of filming right now. So I guess still plenty of space. If only you're going to do some sort of, wait, we can help you. We're the Runaways. End of season. Like, it's not too late to shoot that, to write that, etc., if it hasn't happened already.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for all the chiding that's gone on of late, that, oh, you say it's all connected, and it's not connected because everybody didn't vanish from the snap. Not one show has taken place post-snap yet.
That certainly is the case for Runaways. Certainly, 100%, absolutely. I mean, without even getting into, like, oh, we're going to ignore it, or we're going to this, we're going to that. I mean, this season of Runaways, let's not forget, picks up immediately after the previous season. And if the previous season took place when it aired, that means it's a year, 6 months to a year behind the snap, without even getting into any other wiggle room.
Absolutely. And I think we're just going to have to sit back and see how this goes. But I almost wish they'd be a little bit more coy about it, so it could be a bigger surprise when it happens, because it seems pretty certain it's going to happen.
Pete, what theories do you have?
Zartans, Matt. Zavin reveals herself to be a Zartan, different than the Gaborim. We now have a race for Jonah formally, rather than just aliens. The Zartans, do you know anything about the Zartan deviants?
I don't. I know in the comics they were Kree, right?
The Kree kind of gets thrown around a lot in the comics, and you know, as like a blanket term, and now with the latest,
or maybe Skrull. That's what I think in the comics, Zavin is a Skrull, and there's more kind of the aliens are Skrull.
Yeah, there's a little bit to that. I mean, Kree has never meant less now that, you know, we have a Captain Marvel trailer where we have a Caucasian character who says, we're Kree.
This is true, but Pete, where's all this headed?
Where's it headed? I mean, warring alien factions, potentially. Now a third with Earthlings, somebody who can change their shape, their appearance, who doesn't even have a mouth. I mean, there's a lot there. Stacy refers to Gert as a youngling. Star Wars crossover, Matt? Will not Stacy be training Jedi on the planet of Coruscant before a coruscation ceremony with the Book of Gaborim?
Pete, I think it's a foregone conclusion that there's going to be an episode, a season three episode in which Gert says, "Why don't we look for what is not there instead of what is there?" And someone will say, "Yes, let's look for what is not there," and it'll all be a grand reveal of the hidden planet. Problem solved.
What about the Wilders and their cold case rap? We still don't know all season long, this dumb gun that's been put into a baggie and put into a glove box with DNA on it. And now this DNA on a warm gun that's been picked up by a bare hand with a cop.
I think he was gloved.
Are you certain?
I'm pretty darn certain.
Well, he knew it was warm. Well, anyway.
Regardless, it's only story baloney when the bologna sandwich gets put in front of you on the plate.
But this Anton Chekhov would be rolling in his dramatic grave. Explain our listeners who don't already know about Chekhov's gun and how Runaway Season 2 just took Chekhov's gun and got DNA on it, put it in a baggie, put it in a glove box, and had it change hands, and now had it left warm in the LAPD's lap.
So Chekhov's gun is this writing convention put forth by Antonin Chekhov, the playwright, who said that if you're going to introduce a gun in the first act, you should fire it in the fourth act or the fifth act, something like that. Meaning, don't introduce stuff that you're not going to use later on. And conversely, if you're going to use it later on, introduce it organically. The fact here that there is the mystery of the gun, what hath the gun done? And at the conclusion of these 13 episodes, the answer is the gun done a thing in order to maybe get the parents in trouble. Although whether Alex's DNA or his fingerprints are on there, what's that going to do? If it's fingerprints, that's going to completely release the parents. If it's DNA of some sort, I will admit, Pete, I'm not up to date with my CSIs and my NCISs. I'm pretty sure, though, that you can, certainly it's easy enough to say, oh, it's the DNA of somebody in the same family. But, you know, if I remember my early aughts CSI well enough, I feel like they'll be able to screen out father from mother from son in terms of, you know, in terms of like, oh, somebody who's related to Mr. Wilder has their DNA on here, but not. It's not Mr. Wilder himself. I think that's how that works. But regardless, she's a great lawyer. They're going to get out on bail at the very least. Like, I feel like this is a story boondoggle that ends with their arrest. And everything has been worked back before that. It's not a through line or that sort of thing.
I don't mind a longer mystery. And we can certainly overlook. I mean, we'll call this Schwartz and Savage's gun. It can span seasons. And if the payoff is right, then, you know, we can't question the choice. But right now, okay, they wind up in the hands of law enforcement and it looks tricky on their end. Kind of got to maybe give some idea of what might have gone on with the gun. Yeah, Alex found these files and he says he thinks he knows and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, the strike team having vanished. By the way, when an LAPD strike team goes completely missing, like, you look for them, right? Or is it just like, those guys, they're somewhere out there in the Hollywood Hills. Maybe a dinosaur ate them.
Seems like there's a little bit of friendly finger wagging at some of the finer points of the story arcs, the scripting for these last couple episodes.
Let's have a little fun here. Gert, Old Lace, and Dale's excellent adventure. That could be interesting in season 3.
And the best part is Gert is just being kept in like a cage sort of thing in the back of the car. I'm sure that's going to go over well when, you know, the highway patrol sees that or things of that sort. I don't know. It works for the finale. I don't think that you can get very far. Like at a certain point, Gert needs to use the bathroom, be given food that isn't stuck through the little, you know, slots in the cage thing. Like, yeah, at a certain point, they can't overly rely on this past the first 20 minutes of the next season.
What about the last alien, the unpredictable son of the magistrate and his mate there? They say it's not one of the adults, or at least they don't think it is. Could it be Dale? If it's not Dale, Matt, is it one of the kids or is it somebody else? Can I nominate Mike on a bike?
I think the implication is meant to be that the evil comes from within the Runaways, which is an interesting mirroring of the comics, which had the conceit of some secret person is the mole. Now, we had that this season, although it ended up at a different point and a different thing and a different that. But we're kind of back to who's the mole, but it's now being filtered, I would say, in a much more serious way, because if you're the actual runaway and you want to betray your peeps, or you want to be in touch with Jonah, or you want to be in touch with your parents or whatever, that's one thing. But now to think that there's this whole split personality thing, I'm interested to see where that goes in season 3.
It would have to be one of the ones not in the tube, right? They would know if they had one of their own, which makes it Alex, Molly, Nico, or Gert. And I think your choices become rather limited past that. Would Nico's eyes be going like this if she had the alien persona inside her, or is that powering it? Could Gert be the one? Alex and his single-minded mission to get his parents locked up. I mean, what's not unpredictable alien son than getting your Earther parents collared?
It would be interesting if Alex ends up being the mole. I think also, too, the story has room for if it's Gert in a cage in the back of her dad's SUV, and all of a sudden, again, with a show that's been a little out there in terms of being out in front of some of these mysteries, and like, you know, we've seen like, I'm losing time, what's going on? You know, if it's like, if it's Dale saying, Old Lace, what's wrong? Why are you acting like Gert is different? Like, okay, then we'll know. But I'm going to go with Alex for, you know, reasons.
Building an alien ship could take a generation or two. How are they going to quietly do that for 50 years?
Well, they've been digging this hole since, what, at least the 1930s or something? So I guess they're just confident in their long-term ability to get things done. They are very patient people, Pete.
Last one for me. Who's getting eaten?
Well, I hope it's not Chase, because since Greg Sulkin has been hanging out with Aubrey Omari, he of Cloak fame of Cloak and Dagger, I'd say it's not likely, even if they just happen to randomly meet up while Omari is in New Orleans filming a show. And, you know, Greg Sulkin was just like, hey, let me go to New Orleans to make a new friend.
On the way back to Britain, you know, it's on.
Maybe. Cash that paycheck, be like, I'm going to the New Orleans. This will be great. But I'd say it's probably one of the parents. But again, it's kind of this dodgy proposition, because I don't actually buy that anyone is in danger. Janet? My soul keeps telling me maybe Janet. And I don't know if there's some kind of crossover, like, I don't like her because Handmaid's Tale. Despite the fact that, you know, the actress does a fantastic job and I have sympathy for the character in this show. So I don't know. I don't know. But I think ultimately, Pete, everything is going to be okay.
The right answer was, of course, Carolina, because she is the only one who could fight it off.
Pete, have to mention that during the credits towards the end of them, there was a little moment in memory of our friend Stan Lee. It's been interesting to experience the Stan Lee goodbye from these different kind of, you know, forces connected to Marvel, whether it's this TV show or in Once Upon a Deadpool, that kind of thing. These different ways in which the various facets of Marvel are saying goodbye.
Yeah, as the first show to come out since the passing in late November of Stan Lee, really classy to put the little note there. Evidently, the only time we're going to get him on TV in terms of acting was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. all the way back in that first season. And then there have been stills of him in the Marvel Netflix shows. And then, you know, we've had like some other, you know, little references in Cloak and Dagger and Runaways, but classy nonetheless to include him here.
Well, Pete, with that, let's move to the segment that has set the internet afire. Are you ready to hear from our pal, Fred, in the Netherlands?
Always.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for the final episode of season 2 of Runaways. Well, guys, this was a kind of effort in 11 days, 12 pieces of audio feedback, watching the whole second season. Well, binging is not my thing, and I really respect you having 159 podcasts in 2018. I really cannot understand how you do this. But as I always said, PD guys. So what about this last episode? And of course, I liked it, especially the scene where Nico fights with her parents, Tina and Robert, is so, so amazing. With some slow motions in it, really impresses, especially if you take some screenshots of it. I was so happy to be right once that Stacy indeed also belonged to the possessed or occupied people, so that there is an alien in her. On the other hand, that was not so difficult because he was so acting out of character. When I record this, I just have listened to your episode 5 podcast. Also, the episode 6 is just out. And listening to this podcast, it was so, so funny. I actually was listening to this with my headphones on my bike from work to home, and I was really laughing out loud in the middle of traffic. It was so funny about the Cheese Whiz and Victor in his 1976 world being annoyed by having real cheese instead of Cheese Whiz, and everything you said about that in the episode 5 podcast. And then the whole Eiffel thing again about the texting Cheese Whiz. Or is it sexting Cheese Whiz?
Cheese Whiz. I mean, geez, why don't you get some Velveeta out while you're at it?
I can only imagine right now Fred in the Netherlands is like, wait, I still don't understand this cheese that's not real cheese.
Wait, Eiffel texting Cheese Whiz?
Well.
Listening to the episode 5 podcast also did me remember that when I watched it and I saw Topher and Molly, that it was quite similar for me to the, I don't know if you know those comics in the States, Asterix and Obelix, they're well known worldwide, where the one is not taking magic potion because he fell into the Calderon when he was a baby, and the other one, so Asterix, is taking the magic potion which gives them powers when they have to fight the Romans. If you compare this to Molly and Topher, it's exactly the same. The one got such an overdose of the magic bluish gluey stones that she never has to take it, whereas Topher every time has to take it. I posted something about it on the Facebook page. What bad shooter is Nico, or bad developer is Victor, having these 5 drones and they are not able to shoot one of the kids? It's really unlikely that none of the kids was hit by one of these darts. It was a bit of a nitpick. Chase coming into the Pride camp, and they are telling him no one will get hurt. Yeah. And then a little later, but only if you succeed, and otherwise it will be war. One major criterion for me to judge a season finale is whether it could be a closure. I actually really hate big cliffhangers as everybody. But on the other hand, if a season finale is structured in such a way that you could live with it being the last episode, then I'm satisfied. And in this case, I'm not satisfied at all, because there are so many storylines that are open. What I don't find a problem is if they open a new storyline just before the ending of the season, because you're not invested in that storyline yet. But in this Runaways season 2, there are storylines that are already open for the last 2 or 3 episodes. So, which storylines are still open? 1. Leslie's pregnancy and the fight for the baby by Gaborum and Xartan. 2. Will the original personalities of Victor, Tina, and Stacy survive? 3. What will Dale do with Gert and Old Lace? 4. Will Chase remain in the Pride camp? 5. Will Leslie remain in the Runaways camp? 6. How will it go with Jeffrey and Catherine in police custody? 7. Will there be any follow-up story for Susan and or Frank? And Susan is Leslie's mother. 8. What will happen with the power of the staff over Nico? And what is the thing with her cracky eyes? 9. What role will Xevin play? 10. Why were these magistrates, like Jonah, exiled? 11. How will plans go in building a new ship? Jonah said it would take 2 generations. 12. In which kid or parent will the fourth alien be? 13. What will happen to Janet, Chase, and Carolina? 14. Will Alex ever act smart instead of intelligent? And I want to close this whole season by thanking you for the ride. And last words are for Eiffel. Greetings. All the best. Fred from the Netherlands.
Anyways, since people start talking about computers, I like to go imaginary shopping. Okay, are we done here?
Pete for Eiffel, indeed. Eiffel forever. Fred forever in that monumental, hilarious, thoughtful conclusion there to the season.
That was great. A real culmination to Fred hanging with us throughout this season. Not a binger. It's the way we have to do things sometimes, given the plethora of content we have put on our plate. Can really honor the struggle sometimes we find ourselves going through. But thanks for hanging with us, Fred.
So, Pete, Fred questions the lousy drones here, their inability to hit anything. Is this a little too much hand of the writer?
It is. I thought they were a little over CGI'd in a show. I mean, you pointed out the eyes. The eyes work for me with the CGI. The drones, not so much.
I'll certainly grant you that I don't know exactly what magic eye cracky stuff should look like on a person. I know it was practical makeup in Doctor Strange, but I don't know exactly what that should look like. I do have a sense of what like a plastic or gunmetal drone should look like, you know, in terms of having seen plastic and metal things in the world. Pete, will we get more from Frank and Susan next season, particularly with actor Kip Pardue? You know, we've discussed the allegations against him, etc. Will we see more of either of them, do you suppose?
The story holds an opportunity to cut Frank, that he's in rehabilitation, reindoctrination in a wooden shed, not needed. I think Susan is destined to reappear and setting up this struggle, if not seeking Carolina, seeking her granddaughter out as this messianic figure, and kind of hassling her there. I'm going to flip it around. There could be some kind of rescue mission where the Church of Gaborim is used to try to save Carolina now that she's in the clutches of the aliens. And then there's a, you know, little column A, little of column B, where, you know, those storylines could potentially overlap.
Wow. Church of Gib to save the day. I that's a shocking twist there.
Drama is subverting expectations, Matt.
So true. Lack of closure for season two, something that I think Fred very astutely brought up there. Do you feel a little unsatisfied as to this being an ending of the season? Tune in, you know, in the better part of a year from now, as opposed to click on the next episode.
I'll only feel unsatisfied if they don't get to tell any more stories. I think they have a very sure footing with Hulu. I mean, they're not on Netflix, Matt. So we know that regardless of, you know, tying up a storyline or not, they have a stronger chance of coming back at this point than anything on Netflix. Thank goodness Daredevil rounded out where it did. Given that, I'm really worried about how the Punisher, will finish up the second season. I think Jessica Jones, that was kind of a fait accompli with the showrunner announcing that she was leaving Melissa Rosenberg after the third season. So I think they will end similarly to Daredevil. Hopefully Runaways is not going the way of Marvel Netflix. And, this is a vote of confidence, a cliffhanger ending rather than an annoyance to fans.
I think too, if some sort of power struggle emerges at Hulu, which is possible based on what I've read, I'm not saying necessarily likely, but the exact mechanics of who governs Hulu, that situation has changed separate from the Fox merger. We'll leave it at that. But if somebody was just trying to, you know, throw tacks in the road in order to just hurt Disney, hurt Marvel, whatever it is, I mean, could it be a case Hulu cancels Runaways, Freeform picks up Runaways? Like,
yeah,
that's a completely lateral move, and it's not kind of like, you know, there's the two networks or Runaways could play on Freeform the way some of the content stuff from Marvel Netflix, even separate from contract stuff, but you're not going to have some of that content stuff on basic cable on Freeform, which is for people's in their teens and 20s and 30s that are hip young folks. You know, that's a little bit different than some of the heavier stuff from Marvel Netflix. So, Pete, hopefully before we record our season two wrap, hopefully they announce that renewal. If not, we'll just do a little podcast to announce the renewal when it comes.
Absolutely. When we can fit it in.
Well, Pete, we could not have made it through this season without the people who have supported us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. We run away along, and they're there right with us.
So much so, Matt, that while we had a patron recently cancel, had continued to back the show for more than a year. So it goes to speak to the commitment of our patrons at patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Everybody who contributes gets exclusive podcast content, and then there's all sorts of levels to contribute at.
But Pete, is the greatest gift being able to talk to you on Twitter? And if so, how can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 10,292 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on fantasticgeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, on Instagram, on Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/Fantastic Geek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, as mentioned, we will be back next week on the Runaways podcast feed to talk the conclusion of season two, look at the season as a whole on the Pop Culture podcast feed. Between now and then, we have Punisher coming on Friday. We have Star Trek Discovery coming on Saturday. We have all sorts of goodness that we're looking forward to in 2019. So with that, Pete, I will say adios to all listeners and give you the final 213 word.
I lump you.